Climate disruption, growing social inequality, pollution. We're living in an era of unprecedented crises, resulting in widespread feelings of fear, despair, and grief. Now more than ever, maintaining hope for the future is a monumental task. This is 15 with the author, and my guest today is Kate Davies with her book, Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. Kate is currently senior fellow at the Whidbey Institute, emeritus faculty at Antioch University, and clinical associate professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Washington. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Terry. It's great to be here.
Let's just define intrinsic hope right off the bat.
Sure. Actually, if I may, I'm going to start briefly with extrinsic hope, because this is the type of hope that that people are much more familiar with. And it's, if you look in the dictionary and you look up the word hope, you see it uses words like desire, expectation, anticipation, or fulfillment. In other words, when we say I hope for something, it's usually a hope for an improvement in our external conditions or circumstances. But often life doesn't give us what we hope for. Mm-hmm. Things don't turn out the way we want, and so we end up feeling fearful, disappointed, all of those feelings that you mentioned a minute ago. Extrinsic hope, what I call extrinsic hope, has this shadow side. But there's also what I call intrinsic hope, which is really based more on having a positive outlook or attitude to life. It comes from inside us, rather than being based on a specific expectation that anything is going to get better anytime soon. We can feel positive about life, whether we like it or not. We can stay engaged and stay hopeful about life, whether or not life actually gives us what we hope for.
Yeah, that is an interesting way of putting that, and it does make a lot of sense. I have a friend actually that says, "Hope is not a plan." But
that's great,
isn't it? Yeah, but when you look at it as intrinsic hope, it's a different feeling inside of us.
Right, exactly. It's really the way we approach life. Mm. It doesn't deny the problems that we face, so it doesn't deny climate change or problems in our personal lives at all. But rather, intrinsic hope says yes to life. I may not like what's happening, but I accept it and I'm going to work with it. No matter what happens, whether I succeed or not, I'm still going to work with it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you've spent your life studying environmental issues, and the challenges we see now are not new. This has been coming for generations. Why has it taken so long to get this much attention?
Right. Well, I think we have so much more information than we used to have about what we're doing to the environment and generally the state of the world. You know, you're right. It has been coming for a long time, but we have this. We know so much more than we used to, mm-hmm. And also I think we have much more of a sense that the problems that we face now are global problems. I mean, they may have local manifestations, they may show up locally, but the problems that we face are all are really large scale. You know, poverty, homelessness, mm-hmm. racial injustice, climate change. These are large scale issues, and we're beginning to see that now, and so I think it makes them more prescient somehow. It makes them more obvious.
Mm. True. And our population is exploding along with that is consumerism. How do we address something like that? There really only seems to be so much our Earth can sustain.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, scientists tell us that that we are consuming, I think it's about 2.4 planets a year, as it were, in terms of the natural resources that we're currently using. It's completely unsustainable, and that is a result of both consumption and population. So I think we can look at, for example, what are the roots of consumerism? You know, you just have to look at the ads on TV to see that consumerism is all about wanting more stuff and thinking that getting more stuff will make us feel happy. It's kind of the opposite of feeling grateful for what we have in life. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. You know, we can be grateful that we have eyes to see and ears to hear and arms to hug. And once we are more aware and grateful for just the simple things in life, then often the desire to go out and buy, you know, another pair of shoes, the latest car, the latest gadget, doesn't seem quite so important somehow. Mm-hmm. So gratitude, I talk about consumerism and gratitude and the relationship between them in the book, because this is a really important point.
Oh, absolutely. Gratitude really gives us intrinsic hope.
It does, and it's one of the habits of hope that I identify, because when we're grateful, we naturally feel more hopeful. And in fact, there have been scientific studies done that have shown this, that the more grateful we are for our lives, the more hopeful we tend to be. Now, I don't want to gloss over, you know, the fact that a lot of people in this country don't have enough food to eat, don't have a roof over their heads at all. Mm-hmm. But there is always something we can feel grateful for, even if it's something very small.
Yes, absolutely. I just went out the other morning. The sky was so beautiful, and just took a picture just because it was just, it was so beautiful, and I wanted to capture that moment. So there we have it. We are talking with Kate Davies. She is the author of Intrinsic Hope, and it is Living Courageously in Troubled Times. You talk about something called the invisible gorilla. What does that mean?
So the invisible gorilla was an experiment that was done a few years ago, just fascinating, which proves how much we focus on what it is that we want to see in life and how much we actually ignore as a result. And it was an experiment in which a group of college students were divided up into two teams, and they were asked to play basketball, and an observer was asked to count how many times the ball was passed in, like, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, something like that. And the observers came up with, you know, the ball was passed four times, you know, whatever they had counted. The point here is that most of the observers didn't notice that there was a gorilla, or a person made up in a gorilla suit, actually, who walked across the basketball court, thumped its chest, and then walked off the basketball court. And it's incredible. About half of the observers did not see the gorilla. It was invisible to them because they were so busy counting the number of passes that were made, as they had been instructed to do, that they didn't see the gorilla. It's fascinating.
It's like not seeing the forest for the trees.
Precisely, yes. And I just mentioned, if your listeners are interested, there's a great book on this experiment that's actually called The Invisible Gorilla.
That is amazing. And it's so true, though. And it happens it happens all the time. And it brings about the question about mindfulness. Mm-hmm. How does that give people hope?
Yeah, so when we are really focused on looking at one particular thing, then we don't often see our surroundings, what's happening in the background. We're so attentive to, you know, the number of passes, going back to the invisible gorilla, that are being made, that we don't see things in a larger perspective. We don't step back and see that gorilla. That is one of the things that mindfulness allows us to do. It allows us to be much more aware of our experience and aware of how much is actually going on in the world that often we just shut it out. We don't see it. And so mindfulness allows us to really slow down and take in more of what's happening in life. In the book, I tell the story about being out with my son one night, walking along a river, and he sees a couple of raccoons under the bushes, but because I was so preoccupied with my thinking, I didn't see them. I wasn't mindful, in other words. He was much more mindful of our surroundings in that moment than I was. So it can make us more hopeful, because when we see life as it truly is, it's somehow not through our lenses or through our social conditioning, then it's somehow fresher. It's somehow we're not adding a storyline to what we're actually seeing or doing. And that makes everything come alive and touches our hearts somehow. You know, if you really tune into the beautiful sunset or sunrise that you were mentioning, it really makes us more hopeful, not only because it's beautiful, but because we are really appreciating it. We are really seeing it. We are really being mindful of it.
And as we talk about the different things, and of course about the climate disruption and the pollution and what the resources we are really expending of our Earth, I was amazed at the numbers you have in Intrinsic Hope regarding how animals raised to feed humans are adding to that greenhouse gas emissions. That just blew me away. And as we talk about that, what are some of the steps that we can do? Because I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, I want to eat meat. How do we address that?
Yeah, there've been several studies done that show that animals raised for human food are one of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions when you consider the animal food, the animal's own metabolism and biology, everything that's done for for animal waste and so on. So the question becomes then that one of the main ways that we can reduce our greenhouse gas emissions is to reduce the amount of meat that we eat, and that means going more towards a vegetarian diet. And even for people who really like meat, even if you just say, okay, one meal a week or one dinner a week, I'm not going to eat meat. I'll have a vegetable-based protein instead, or nuts or something like that as the protein source. That can make a huge difference, really a significant difference in greenhouse gas emissions. And of course, if you want to become entirely vegetarian or vegan even, then so much the better. But just doing something makes you feel better about yourself for sure, and may well does something to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, and I think that's important for people to understand, is that, you know, people on one side or the other side aren't just saying, well, you have to do all of these things. It's taking those steps. It's being mindful. It's being hopeful. And it's doing those little pieces that ends up, it sort of becomes this ball that rolls up and gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We do what we can. We can't be perfect in the sense of being completely environmentally pure, just because of the way systems are set up, the transportation system, the food system, and so on. But we can do what we can, and do it not necessarily because we expect to see results from our actions, and this is where the intrinsic hope comes back in, But because we care about the future of the planet, because we care about the type of world we're leaving to our children and our grandchildren, and we think of ourselves as caring, as ethical, as responsible people, whether or not we actually achieve something, we can take action just because we care and because we think of ourselves as good, virtuous people.
Exactly, exactly. We're talking with Kate Davies. She is the author of Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. The book is filled with lots of wonderful information, and it is also filled with some good news about our environment, some things that have happened. You have a little bit of information about, I think it was in 2000, from 2005, there has been lesser emissions.
Sure. So there is good news too. You know, I think in our society we often focus on on the bad news, on what's wrong with the world. I use the word problematize. We problematize life. We turn it into a series of problems to be solved. But there is also good news. You know, the very rapid growth of renewable energies, for example, at a global level, just astounding. And these types of things are very hopeful signs. Some technological developments too. There are hopeful signs out there, but we don't often think about them, and we don't often hear about them on the news. But they are there if we choose to look.
There we go. And one final question: what is your hope for Intrinsic Hope?
So my hope is that this book is helpful and useful for people. You know, in my work and in my travels, I encounter a lot of people who are feeling sad and depressed and angry and frustrated about the state of the world and about the directions that we seem to be heading in. And that's really why I wrote this book, is to really try to help people to reclaim hope, to help people to uncover a sense of hope in their lives when there is so much hopelessness out there, and also to provide them to provide folks with some very simple things that you can do. I call them habits of hope that certainly work for me and make me feel more hopeful in my daily life. So I hope that this book is hopeful. That's helpful and hopeful. That's my largest hope.
There we go. And you know, it's interesting because I talked with the man who co-wrote the Book of Joy, which was with the Dalai Lama and Archbishop.
Tutu.
Oh. Yes. And thank you. But what I was thinking about that as you're talking about intrinsic hope and your hope is that in the Book of Joy, here are two men that have gone through such incredibly hard, horrible things, and they're both so very joyful and hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And I think there is a strong relationship between joy and intrinsic hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah. Kate, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and I hope for the best.
Thank you so much, Terry. Thank you.
Thanks.